Welcome to the High and Low Podcast. This is Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo. Today we're going to talk about a lot of random Bravo news. And then I'm going to do a movie review. I love movies. I'm such a little cinephile. Just me and my movies all my life. And they've never disappointed me. I mean, they do. But you know what I mean. They're always there for you. And last night I stayed up late to watch the remake. It's remake, but it's not. It's not a carbon copy the way some of these movies are, you know, the way that they remade Footloose and it was a carbon copy, but just terrible. Why did they try to do that? Mm-mm. Anyway, I watched the remake of Roadhouse. I have so many thoughts on this movie, from how it was made to Jake Gyllenhaal having like 1% body fat, looking like an actual UFC fighter. That's got to take a lot of effort. So this immediately goes into the category of movies I'm going to watch while I work out, because they're that impressive that somebody could physically take their body there. But we're going to get into the plot. We're going to get into the drama. There's so much drama around this movie, and I'm sure you haven't even heard about it. But before that drama, let's talk Bravo drama. There's a lot popping, per usual. It was the 18th anniversary this week of Real Housewives of Orange County, the franchise that spawned it all. Vicky yelling about the family van, Tamara throwing wine about assist and decease. And to those of us who have been watching since 2006, kudos, because it really was a guilty pleasure that you couldn't talk about openly. You know what I mean? It was one step, one elevated step from watching Bad Girls Club and being really into that. Like, that's how shameful it was to say that you watched Real Housewives. And it remained that way for a long time. The show had a stigma around it. It wasn't super popular. It was an undercurrent show. And then one day the tides shifted. The levees broke. And it became mainstream and acceptable. I'm not sure when that happened, but I think it was within the past like 5-6 years. And I think that the pandemic helped it as well, because during the pandemic, we all just embraced our trash TV selves. We watched Tiger King. We watched all of these shows, and everybody was like, hey, come on over to Bravo. The water's warm. You into boats? We got boat shows. You like cooking? We got some cooking shows. You like watching vapid grown women psychologically break each other down? We got a lot of that. You like watching emotionally stunted grown men act horribly and somehow thrive? Come on over. So happy 18th birthday, Real Housewives. It's been a journey. Started from the sky tops, now we're here. Looking back, it's always the fashion that shocks me the most. And we know my stance on this. We know my stance is I would rather know who the housewife is than see a version of them that's been glammed up that they don't even know who they are anymore. Like, they're just wearing whatever someone told them to wear, and they're just, they have whatever glam someone decided for them to have. I'd rather see someone puttering around in their kitchen putting 9 lemons in a bowl, doing their own hair and makeup, just showing us who they actually are. I think we've gotten away from that, and it's more into, like, this is a production, which that's not what we're here for. So my hope is that Housewives, like most of society, I think, is trying to, moves back into the land of authenticity and leaves all the fakery and BS behind. That's my wish for Bravo. So many things are happening, though. I'm going to talk about probably 10, 12 different things that I'm tracking that are happening in Bravo world and Bravo adjacent world. Number one is the thing that made me laugh the hardest that I saw this week, which was Kim Zolciak is still trying to sell things on this. I think it's an Instagram account that's separate to hers called like Kim Z B Closet. And I only know that because there's an account called The Good, The Bad, and The Fake that has been tracking the hijinks of wig for years. And she shows items, like she'll pull up a purse or a pair of shoes and she'll be like, never worn, never worn. And so this account then goes back and finds actual footage of her wearing the item. She had a coughing fit from laughing at that so hard. But then they find actual footage of her wearing the item and they splice it right next to the footage of her holding it up online saying it's never been worn. So the one this week is these. To me, look, I'm not going to yuck anybody's yum. I'm not a fan of these shoes. They are almost like, how would I describe these shoes? Well, they're not understated, per usual, for Kim's taste. I believe they are Gucci, judging by the pattern I can barely see. But they have like a little rounded toe, a very high heel. it's a covered toe, but then it's like a mesh crisscrossy lace situation all up the front of the foot. And then there's little like poofs, like a poof on the end of the tassel thing. It's, I don't know if it's feathers or if it's fur, but it's a poof. It's a pom-pom. So not a shoe that blends. All right. You can't get away with wearing them and somebody's like, oh, I didn't even notice. Did you have those on? Oh, I didn't realize you were wearing those. Like, no, these stand out. So she keeps doing this with items that she's worn on the show. So this is like years ago. She wore these years ago. These are old fashioned. And we know for people who like to buy directly from these fashion houses, it's like, well, what year was that? What season was that? It was a while ago. And she wore them on the show. And then she's trying to sell them as never worn. Oh, Kim, never change. And as we all know, I don't watch full episodes of Vanderpump Rules, but I keep up with the drama that happens on the episodes. So I'm aware that Sandoval has been kind of putting out into the world that he truly loved. What's her name? Rachel, Raquel. See, that's how ready we are to just move on. I'm ready. Let us move on. It was a lot. But this is all these kids have. Kids. How old is this man? Is he 40? He's 40. Anyway, he keeps wearing the lightning bolts. He's still got the candy-ish looking necklaces on and the nail polish. And apparently Jax came back on the show, made fun of his nail polish, which I appreciate. Someone needs to take him down a peg or five. And then he's also dealing with the repercussions of his actions and that Rachel Raquel does not want to be his soulmate, his lightning bolt soulmate anymore, or at least not right now. Because I can see those two oddballs just circling back at some point. And then Sheena, never going to say it right and I don't care. She is still out there talking about how I wanted to go on Dancing with the Stars. I was supposed to be cast on Dancing with the Stars. I took dance lessons. And while that's very, very cringe to me, there's also a part of me that is envious of someone who just openly complains about something that they wanted and didn't get. Because that's the kind of stuff that I just hold down deep inside. And I let it turn into little pieces of coal in my soul. But she'll just come out and say it. I wanted that. I wanted that like a little kid. She's got to sleep well at night. She gets it all off her chest. It's why, to me, watching Jersey is cathartic. I don't like to recap Jersey because, boy, the fans get a little bit nuts. But I might do it this year. But I've always enjoyed watching it because say what you will, they get the emotions out. And not a lot of people can do that. Is it serving them well? I'm not sure. I'm not sure where that tipping point is of get your emotions out and we're going too far and things are a mess and dramatic and nobody can have a day where they're not crying and screaming. It's a fine line. It is interesting to see them just yell at someone. Just get it all out. And another thing, you brought me sprinkle cookies. You know I don't like sprinkle cookies. I would never say that to someone. But that's the kind of like pure energy that I'm here for when it comes to Real Housewives. What I don't enjoy is the plotting and the scheming, like what we just saw in Beverly Hills, where Kyle's like onboarding 8.5 Anne and setting her up to go after Sutton. And then she's just looking in her little compact, powdering her nose while it's happening. Like, step up, say it with your chest, Kyle. Say it. You got an issue? Take on the issue. I have no respect for this plotting. I have no respect for her having somebody else do her dirty work, fight her fights, and do it badly. And speaking of that, people are talking about buying Beverly Hills, which is, of course, Mauricio's show on Netflix that is centered around his real estate business that he now has, I think all but Portia, all the daughters but Portia, because she's not old enough yet, are either working there, interning there, always there, whatever, learning it. And that, I think, is adorable, the idea of a little family business. But of course, that's not all the show is about. It's really focusing on the drama between Mauricio and Kyle, and people are irritated that we're learning more, we're getting more actual information on buying Beverly Hills. Face Reality 16 is recapping in her posts on Instagram highlights of that show when it comes to just the interactions between Kyle and Mauricio. So not the real estate part that nobody really cares about. Like, I'm sure the houses are nice that they show, but also who cares?
The housing market is a complete shit show. Mortgage rates are ridiculous. Most people don't have two nickels to rub together, let alone the money to buy a home in Los Angeles. And surely not the mansions and crazy villas that they show. I remember when I lived in LA, one of my favorite things to do on a Sunday was just to walk around and look at the open houses in my area. I lived in like the Hollywood area, and I would see these tiny little bitty, like a Polly Pocket little house. Adorable. A gingerbread house. And I would walk in and I was like, look at this little bitty pantry and this little bitty driveway. And the house would be $1 million. And that was a long time ago. And the house is probably $5 million now. And it wasn't just one house. It wasn't 10 houses. It was 20 houses. It was every single time I went for years that I lived out there. I'd be like, la la, let me go look at these open houses because it's so fun to pretend like anyone could afford a house on a cute little tree-lined street in Los Angeles. That's as close as I've ever gotten to sadomasochism, torturing myself with really nice real estate in Los Angeles. And in some clips that were shown from, I guess, this week's most recent episode, Mauricio is saying he's heard the rumors about Morgan, Wade, and Kyle, and he doesn't believe them. He doesn't think that there's anything up between his wife and Morgan, Wade. And oops, the daughters first learned of their official separation when Mauricio just mentioned it in passing because he thought that they already knew, but they hadn't been told. So it's very sad to watch, and it's also frustrating to see how it's being handled, both in their family, I guess. And that's hard to know what's real and what's not, both in their family and then publicly. And it's like, someone just say it. Again, I'm Sam Kinison just screaming, say it! Like, we all know, we all see it. Just be honest. Is it Kyle? Is it coming back to her? Like, just be honest with Mauricio, because he seems aloof with like this energy of it could all work out and maybe everything is fine. Her face, her demeanor, she's done. And then more clips of the episode show Kyle riding a bike, as in an actual bicycle with a chain and two tires, a bicycle, handlebars. And she's coming up a hill to their giant aspen home, of course, and she's wearing a hat, sun safety. She has two gigantic bags, one holding each handlebar and a bag, and they're flip-flapping in the wind. Flip-flap, 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 as she's pedal-pedaling with her little legs up to the house. And she gets there, and she gets her little Hermes bag, you know, because she's always got one on her. If she doesn't have one on her, I think she passes out. I think that's what happens. But she's got one on her, and then she takes these giant orange bags, and you realize that these are big old Hermes bags. So she took a bicycle to the Hermes store and rode home with probably, I don't know, $50,000, something dumb worth of merchandise in these giant orange bags. Hashtag only in Aspen, I guess. I mean, it's almost like another universe. Like, where could you ever ride a bike to a store like that and then just be like, yeah, no, I'm just going to ride my bike home with these giant bags. I'm not going to get mowed down by a huge SUV, and I'm not going to get just kicked. Sometimes I just put a stick in one of my spokes and then take my giant Hermes bags. So Aspen for you. But that's the kind of quirky behavior that would have been perfect for a Real Housewives episode, was the point of a lot of the comments on that, of Kyle's giving us this like Machiavellian, boring, mean girl energy on Real Housewives. And then she goes and does something quirky and elitist on the other show. Come on, you're supposed to save that for Real Housewives. And it really is a different life. She walks into the house and she has those giant bags and she's like, shh, shh, don't tell your father. Don't let him know that I just went shopping. Why? Don't you make your own money? She's got Real Housewives money. She's probably getting a paycheck from being on Buying Beverly Hills. And then also, you know, she goes on Amazon Live like every other day, it seems. Surely that is Hermes money. But she rushes off to go hide her purchases as if she wasn't filmed by a camera crew coming up to the house with the two giant bags. Okay. And speaking of Hermes, there was a lawsuit that was filed this week from two separate people. I'm not sure where they're from because I haven't gotten to read it yet. I'll try to pull it up. Ooh, I got it. I pulled it up. This is fun. All right. The two plaintiffs are Tina Cavallari and Mark Glinoga. It says this is a class action complaint, and there are four violations. Number one, violation of Sherman Act. We're going to learn about that. Violation of Cartwright Act. Two different violations of the Cartwright Act. And then the fourth thing is a violation of unfair competition. So the summary, the nature of the action is that it's an antitrust and unfair business practices class action arising out of Hermes tying the purchase of a Birkin bag to the purchase
of other luxury clothing and accessory items. They're saying that that practice is unlawful. All right, here's some fun facts about Hermès that are included in the lawsuit. Origins date back to 1837 when it began designing and manufacturing high-quality harnesses for horses that they sell direct to consumers. They have 43 retail stores across the United States, and 8 of those retail stores are in California, where both of the plaintiffs are from. Then it takes a turn, and there's a whole section, Section B, just focusing on the Birkin handbag. It says the Birkin handbag. They talk about how special the Birkin handbag is. It's so special. Oh, it takes so long to make one. Oh, the leathers are so special. We take the most rare animals that are just living in the wild, and we kill them, and we rip their skin off, and we put them in the shape of this bag that has been made a million times, and we dye it a color, and then we give it to a rich lady. That's my version of what it says about the rare leathers. There's a quote in here, and I don't know where this quote came from, but I'm going to read it like I'm a snooty person who wrote it.
The desirability of an Hermès Birkin handbag, a symbol of rarefied wealth, is such that not even a global pandemic can dull demand for it.
Don't know where that quote was pulled from. In the second quarter of 2021, Hermès sales for the leather and saddlery division, which includes the Birkin handbag, doubled from a year ago and rose by 24% from pre-pandemic levels. Now, I'm about to get mad. This is what we know from the pandemic, that the rich got much, much richer during the pandemic, and the rest of us did not. And some of you might be like, the rich, does that mean me? Nope, doesn't mean you. It's like 50 people. You're not one of them. Trust me, it's fine. We should all be against them. I'm talking about like the Walton family. I'm not going to go off about the Waltons today. I won't do it today. But I will say they're the worst that ever was, possibly. They're in the running for the worst that ever was, in my opinion. A blight on the history of humanity. Multiple yachts, living in immense wealth, underpaying the people who work at their stores to the point where they have to rely on government assistance. So you and I right now as taxpayers, we're helping to supplement someone with the ability to work at Walmart because they don't get paid enough to survive. And now you know what they're doing? I'm going to tell you. They are going to start charging people for the privilege of bagging and scanning their own groceries. That's right. If you want to use a self-checkout line at Walmart, you have to be a member of the subscription Walmart Plus. They're going to have us all restocking, mopping and sweeping the stores, but paying for the privilege to do so by the end of this, I'm telling you. Billionaires, multi-billionaires, all of them. They don't need to do this. They could put good out into the world. They choose not to. That's my beef. How much money is enough? When you have so much money that you could spend $1 million a day and you still wouldn't put a dent in your money after 100 years, there's a problem. That's a sickness. Fine. That was my one a day. I get one a day, one time a day. I get to go off on Walmart, and that was my one time a day. Back to the lawsuit. The Birkin handbag is an icon of fashion. Look, that's subjective, everybody. That's subjective. They're quoting a Vanity Fair article. So somebody wrote that in a Vanity Fair article, and now it becomes fact. But whatever, this helps them make their case. And then Section C is talking about illegally tying things to the Birkin bag. And they call it a scheme. Ooh, this is getting sassy. They say defendants, as in Hermès, implemented a scheme to exploit this market power by requiring customers to purchase other ancillary products. So things like, you know, keychain, scarves, they sell a bunch of crap in there. They're saying you have to buy other stuff for a while before you can be considered for a Birkin bag. Quote from the lawsuit, with this scheme, they are able to effectively increase the price of Birkin handbags and thus the profits. Okay. That is weird, though. It's like I used to work at high-end restaurants, and if you came in and you just wanted a ribeye or you just wanted a big old steak, it would be illegal of me to say, you can't have the steak. You have to get a salad first. No, you still can't have the steak yet. You need to also get a side of some kind in order for you to get the steak. You know what? I don't know. I don't know about you. I don't know about you getting a steak. Did you buy a drink? What kind of drink did you get? Okay, I'll think about it. So this lawsuit lays out the fact that a Birkin handbag will never be on display. On display, on display, on display. will never be on display at an Hermes store, nor can you order one. Nor can you order one and say, I would like this color, I would like this kind, that it's all this big game where only select clients are ever shown a Birkin in a private room. And it says specifically, only those deemed worthy are shown a handbag. It goes into detail about how the Hermes sales associate, SAs, people call them their SAs, are charged with deciding who is worthy based on their, quote, purchase history and purchase profile. Ooh, this is what I love. All right, they're breaking down the commission rates. And it says that a sales associate is paid 3% on any product that's not a bag. So shoes, scarves, belts, jewelry, home goods. Then they get 1.5% commission on a bag that's not a Birkin. Then they get no commission whatsoever on the sale of a Birkin handbag. Wow, that is surprising. I never knew that before. I wonder why they do it that way. So they have no incentive to sell a Birkin handbag, but they have a lot of incentive to sell the other just random stuff in the store. It says that they are instructed to use the Birkin handbag as a way to coerce customers to purchase other products where they get their 3% commission. 3% is not even a lot. I'm pretty sure you get a higher percentage if you work at Nordstrom's. That's shocking. I would love a sales associate, either anonymously or if you're no longer a sales associate, to DM me and let me know, did you make enough money to live well? Because I would hope that if you're in that store from 9 to 5, selling to all these wealthy people, seeing all this foolishness, that you are making enough money. I hope the hourly wage is good because you got to deal with rich people and that's not fun. I remember talking to flight attendants years ago and they would say that they would prefer to work back in coach in regular airline seats than first class because the demands of first class are so much higher. You're doing so much more for people. People can be snooty and demanding. And then in coach, you're really like you're left for dead in coach, which we all know. Plaintiff Cavallari. We're getting into the plaintiffs and their specific beefs. The plaintiff Cavallari has spent tens of thousands of dollars at Hermes and had been coerced into purchasing products they didn't want, ancillary products, so the shoes, the belts, to obtain access to Birkin bags. And in September of 2022, here we go, here's where things went sideways. It's a thin line between love and hate, y'all, obsession and disgust. September of 2022, the plaintiff Cavallari, not Kristen, contacted Hermes about purchasing another Birkin bag. You already had one. This person already had one. They want another. Gotta get them all. Gotta collect them all. Rich lady beanie babies. That's what this is to me. This person was told, quote, specialty bags are going to clients who have been consistent in supporting our business. So plaintiff Cavallari understood she would have to spend more on ancillary products to obtain access to another Birkin bag. As a result, she was unable to purchase another Birkin bag that she wanted in September 2022. Then in 2023, the other plaintiff Glenoga, sought to purchase a Birkin bag, but was counseled by a sales associate to purchase other products in order to potentially obtain a Birkin. I mean, at a certain point, don't you just turn to them and just be like, how much? Like, how much? Can I just write you a check? What do you need? Like, surely someone has done that. Someone has gotten fed up with this song and dance and just been like, listen, Rick, sales associate Rick, you're wielding a lot of power here. I'm very busy. I have to go exploit people to make enough money to buy this damn bag. Can you just tell me what you need? Okay, I skipped around a bit in this lawsuit. There's a bunch of stuff, but they get into the Sherman Act. And the Sherman Act that they've cited twice in the violations prohibits monopolization of any part of the trade or commerce among the several states or with foreign nations. So it's an anti-monopoly law. And I'm not going to get sidetracked here, but I don't think it's working that well. I think the Sherman law is not doing great. It seems like a lot of companies are a monopoly right now. Is this where we make a stand? Does it start with Hermes? We'll see how this goes. And the direct allegation is that Hermes willfully and intentionally engages in predatory, exclusionary, and anti-competitive conduct with the design, purpose, and effect of unlawfully maintaining its market and or monopoly power. Then the Cartwright Act that they cited, it says that the Cartwright Act prohibits the combination of resources by two or more persons to restrain trade or commerce or to prevent market competition. And then more quotes from the Cartwright Act about really not establishing a monopoly, which they're saying Hermes has done. And a lot of people online were joking that those bags that Kyle had on the bicycle, they seemed pretty empty. They were flip-flapping in the wind. They didn't seem like they were very heavy. It seemed like there was just random Hermes stuff in there. And maybe that's her thing. You know, she said in a show that my center of town is wherever the Hermes is. And that's, you know, that's how I, that's where the whole town is to me. And that's how I get around. The stress. Maybe she's got to go there and pay her dues. It's like go to her clubhouse and buy random stuff. That's your membership dues at that little country club where you don't really get to hang out. You just randomly buy a bag every now and then. You have to go in there, show your face, have everybody like you, type into the little machine that you came in this day, this month, at this time, and you bought some random crap. And from a marketing engagement perspective, it is kind of smart to add gamification. It's essentially what it is. It's elite secretive gamification. And I could see how it would make you insane, because normally when you have gamification, like whether it's, you know, how many miles am I until I get my platinum level, until I'm select plus this Marriott Bonvoy gold elite, whatever it is that you've got in your life that you see where you're at and there's different levels to it. That's gamification, right? That keeps you going. There are clear rules to it. And usually they have like a little bar and you see how you're going from one end to the other end and you have 10 more points to get before you reach this level. Except at Hermes, it's all secret. You have no idea where you are. You just have to keep running, keep pushing that rock up that hill. And one day maybe you walk into the store and your little SA has a smirk on their face and they've got a little bag for you. Now you don't get to pick the color and you don't get to pick the leather, but they've got it kicking around if you want it. That's how it seems in my mind that it goes. So what are they asking for? What do these two rich people want? They're asking for restitution, damages, and an amount to be determined at trial. They want this to go to trial. They want Hermes or their people to cover their attorney's fees, and they want an order to stop Hermes from continuing to engage in the practices that they're complaining about, enforcing people or coercing people to buy a bunch of stuff they don't want that Hermes sells because the sales associates make commission on that before they'll give you the actual bag that you came in for. Well, that's interesting. I'm going to keep an eye on that and see what happens. I assume there's going to be a filing in response. This was filed March 19th. I'm sure Hermes will file to dismiss or something. We'll see what road it takes. I'm still really irritated on behalf of anyone who's a sales associate that you get no commission from selling the bags that people want the most. I feel like maybe they should unionize. If that's the highest priced item and the thing that people want the most, and they come in there buzzing around the sales associate, probably trying to make friends with them, annoy them, whatever, why wouldn't you give them a commission off of that bag? It's exorbitantly priced anyway. Not even 1%. Zero. I want to talk to an SA so bad. 3%. I'm going to be going off about this all day. Because look, I've worked in fine dining restaurants where you get 15% of everything that hits the table. Like, it's just built in. And those are great places to work where they've already added in what the server will make. So you don't have to have that stress of, will this person give me a good tip when they get up and leave after I've laughed at all of their jokes that weren't funny and crumb their table? So 3% to me is such an insult. I'm looking at the Hermes website right now. You know, those sandals that everybody else, there's knockoffs everywhere of them, but it's like, you know, the leather across the top of the foot. It's just a slide. It's $760. So 3% of that is $22. So you got a lady talking to you for an hour, walking around the store, looking at stuff, touching things. She buys a pair of sandals. You got $22. The math ain't mathing for me on that. And I'm one of those people, too, that I don't want stuff in my life that I don't want or need. They sell a bunch of just random stuff, right? They've got like these little leather horses that people like hang off of the bags. They got scarves. They got random other shoes. They got dishes. They've got belts. They've got things. And I get that. Remember, Yolanda Hadid was really big into the belts. Like, that was the only belt that she ever wore. But shoes wear out. Like, a belt doesn't wear out for a very long time. So you buy a belt, you got a belt for a long time. You don't need another one. You don't need all these trinkets and knickknacks and stuff. And meanwhile, the sales associate is barely getting any commission for giving you all this crap. What's the point? I'd rather be like, hey, what's up? Hey, oh, you're my sales associate named Sam. Hi, Sam. How are you? Here's $500. How about you just call me when you get one of the bags in that I've told you that I'm interested in? That has to be happening. All right, I have to let that go. I have to walk away from that. Let's talk about something else that really irritates me. Let's go from one rant to another. 8.5 Ann put out a statement, a very verbose, loquacious statement. I think it was three separate slides that you had to scroll on Instagram to read it all. I skimmed it. When it comes to a message from the Real Housewives, I read it as quickly as someone reads a clue when they're in The Amazing Race. She starts by saying, I got word today that I will not be returning to The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. We know. We've been knowing that since we first met you. She goes off because it's important to her that we know that she did not audition for this show. It's important that we know that she was specifically reached out to after they had already been filming for a few weeks. Now, the one line out of all this nonsense, the one line that I focused on the most was that she says, I was excited about the opportunity. I thought following exactly what I was instructed to do throughout filming last season was the way the, quote, game was played. Listening to what I was instructed to do was my rookie mistake. Listening to what I was instructed to do. To me, that sounds like she's saying, Kyle told me to do all this stuff. She could be insinuating that producers told her to do it. She's not naming names. Like, this is why I hate this kind of like, oh, I have to clear my name and come out and say something, but I'm not really going to say what happened. Like, tell us or don't. Go away. We didn't ask for a statement in the first place. You got something to say, then say it, because I promise we're never going to pay attention to you again. Like, this is all you got. This is your farewell, your goodbye, your swan song. Just tell us. But it's just like 8.5 Ann to botch even her attempt to blame shift. She goes on about how she's not obsessed with Sutton's esophagus, exclamation point, LOL. See, well, there's the funny thing about that 8.5 Ann is there's words and then there's actions. And we only judge you on your actions. And you went after that esophagus multiple times. So you can say this now in hindsight, but we saw what we saw. You did what you did. She talks about all the hopes and dreams that she had of things that she wanted to share with the show, like her amazing husband and family. We don't want to see it. You can go ahead and take him and exit stage left. We've looked into the husband. We see the allegations of sexual assault, multiple allegations, and we're good. We're going to see what happens with that in court. We're going to follow that case, and that's all we want to hear about that. Thank you. At the end of her note, she writes, to the fans that saw past what was portrayed and saw the real me, all capitals, thank you so much for the love and support. Who are you talking to? Who's out there pandering to 8.5 Ann? Dorit bought 7 fans when they were in Spain. How many fans did Ann buy? These are the kind of Bravo-themed SAT questions we should have. If Dorit buys 7 fans and 8.5 Ann buys 2 fans, but all of the fans are made from paper and wood, do Dorit and 8.5 Ann actually have fans? If so, how many do they have? And it's a true riddle that I just wrote out of nowhere, because either way, the answer is 9! 9! Which is just the German translation of the word no. But to us, it sounds like 9. The total number of fans, if you believe that their fans are actually fans, is 9, because Dorit had 7 and 8.5 Ann had 2. But then also, if you're agreeing that they don't really have fans and you say 9, you're just saying no. Anyway, I thought it was clever. And then 8.5 Ann gets into some athlete stuff. As an athlete, challenges only make you stronger. I thought you were a nurse. As an athlete, you play pro? I used to play some sports. Can I say I'm an athlete forever? Let's do it. Oh, man, but some of the comments I'm reading on All About the Tea posted this. A lot of people posted it, but I was reading the comments from All About the Tea, and somebody said, that's a really long letter for something we already knew just after 2 appearances. Someone else said, Kyle used her, and she obviously still can't see it. It's a shame, really. I see from her statement that she maybe can see it now. Now, the talk of shame, my friend Kiki and I are usually on the same page about almost anything. But we differ on this because she would have put a post, and I need to ask her about this, where she said she thought Anne-Marie should have come back for a second season. I gasped audibly. I don't know if it's chaos theory or if she felt like maybe she didn't get a good edit because she had other things going on. She lost her mother. She had other things happening in her life. We saw none of that. We just saw her going after this esophagus like crazy, gaslighting, leveraging her medical profession to diagnose, misdiagnose, and gaslight Sutton about very serious and real health issues that many people watching Real Housewives, watching Bravo, have and have dealt with a loved one. And she's sitting there saying that those things don't exist. There is no such thing as a small esophagus. So what is this stretching? Gabapentin this, gabapentin that. Definitely misquoting Sutton. I thought that's where it got dangerous too, because she was completely misrepresenting information, medical information that Sutton shouldn't have to share anyway. But she said, yeah, you know, I take my gabapentin right before I go to bed. My doctor said it was fine that I would, you know, go out, have a drink or whatever with dinner, and then I take it before I go to bed. So she's not drinking while she's on it. She may have had a drink earlier in the night or the day, but she's not lining up a row of shots and chasing her gabapentin with it. That's going to bother me forever because she really did misrepresent that. So I'm mad at her forever for just this misinformation in the world we live in right now is already dangerous when it comes to real serious stuff. So for her to have people spun up over things that are really pretty simple just made me angry. That, her husband, bye. So I'm going to have to ask Kiki why she feels that way. Update, I messaged Kiki and she sent me a message. I was like, can you state for me clearly why you want Anne-Marie to have a second season? And I'll play it on the pod because I still have not figured out like the best way to have somebody come and talk with me on the pod. I know that some people go and they do like a Zoom recording. It just seems like a lot of effort. There should just be a way for her to call and just be in here, but it doesn't happen that way. So anyway, she sent me a voice note. I'm going to play it for you right now. This is why Kiki, my friend, Talk of Shame, thinks that 8.5 Anne should have had a second season. Here we go.
I understand the reasons why people don't want Anne-Marie back on their screens. I get it. You know, the whole 8.5, obviously the allegations against her husband. But here's my thing. I never want to hold a woman accountable for the actions of her man. Because I know people who've been put in these positions where their men did horrible things. They didn't know. They found out with the rest of us. And truly, it's not fair to her, especially if, let's say, she does want to leave him because she finds out these allegations are true. You know, I want her to be able to build a life. You know, she obviously made her own money as an athlete, but I want her to continue her career. And if that involves, you know, being a housewife, so be it. You know, he doesn't have to be on the show. Michael Darby isn't on the show, and Ashley gets to go on, right? So if people don't want to see his face, he doesn't have to be a part of the Housewives. There used to be a time when we never saw husbands on Housewives. And, you know, after reading her statement on IG about how she came into filming late, her mother was dying and then died a few weeks after filming, obviously there was a reason she wasn't present. And then when they, you know, kind of maybe producers pushed her and said, you know, let's go with this esophagus storyline so you have some interaction, she said she played the game. And I absolutely believe that. I think that she didn't do anything that wasn't deserving of a redemption season. Now, their mistake was probably putting her in as a full-time housewife when they probably should have said, let's call her a friend of, and ramped her up. But I still think that Anne-Marie deserves a second season.
Valid points. Great points. Points I agree with. I agree. I don't think that a woman should be blamed for horrible behavior exhibited by her husband, especially she did not know him at the time. These allegations of sexual assault are from college. And so they were not dating or in each other's lives at that point. She did have a lot going on in her personal life. She was brought in late. It was weird from the jump. And who knows what producers slash Kyle told her she needed to do in order to really make a stake and make a claim coming in late into the season. Having said that, I would never be able to get over her leveraging her medical experience to gaslight someone. That's the big thing for me. The veracity with which she went after Sutton's esophagus, you know, the eating disorder, and her willingness to do Kyle's bidding right in front of Kyle, really acting as her arm, her agent, and then being very mindful to not bring Kyle into it when push came to shove. She was too in on the Kyle plots for me. But otherwise, yeah, I completely agree with the other points. And I think it honestly does explain why Bravo took a lot of care with her. They had her on Watch What Happens Live. They, at the reunion, did not go as hard on her as they could have. And I think that they realized that they helped to facilitate setting her up for this epic fail that we saw. Bringing her in late, probably coaching her in the wrong directions. But she took that, though. And she has been watching. This is another thing that bothered me about 8.5, Anne, as long as we're getting it all out. You could tell that she had watched the show before, but she feigned ignorance about it. She pretended that she didn't. Some of us don't know all of the issues here. So, you know, maybe Erica, if you could like explain to us, like, what? Stop it. That's the biggest plot line on. You're telling me that you've never watched this. Save it. So that kind of disingenuous, manipulating, plotting, that whole thing. We're full. We got enough of that. There's enough of those people at the table. We don't need any more of that. But, you know, who knows? With all these Bravo shows that we have now, they could do an island of misfit toys, of one-hit wonders, where they do nothing but have a trip full of all of the housewives who only had one season. How fun would that be? Absolute chaos. And then, oh my gosh, what else happened this week? Queen Karen, sweet Karen, the grand dame of Potomac, Miss Five Wicks, got into a crash in her vehicle, her Maserati. She came out pretty quickly and said that she was having dinner with a friend, that they were talking about emotional things, that she was driving and a car swerved and was going to hit her. So she swerved to not hit the car. A car was coming straight for her, she said. And so she hit a median, I believe, and then a sign, a street sign, and then a tree. And her airbags deployed. And a couple people told me, you know, if your airbags deploy, the car is totaled because they can't tuck the airbag in such a way that it would be safe again. But then, you know, a few hours go by and she is charged with driving under the influence. So it went from Karen was aggressively driving and got into an accident to she was charged with driving under the influence, a DUI. And apparently she also had a suspended registration. I don't know how your registration gets suspended. And I guess she's also facing a DWI. I need to research that. I've never understood the difference and the nuances between DUI and DWI and how you can get both. Well, I looked it up and it's just as confusing as I thought it would be. It's either driving under the influence or driving while intoxicated. And they can mean different things depending on what state you're in. So a DUI could mean driving under the influence of alcohol or driving under the influence of drugs. They could be over-the-counter prescription or illegal. It encompasses all of that. Whereas a DWI while intoxicated could mean driving while intoxicated or driving while impaired. And that impairment could be the alcohol and drugs mentioned under DWI, or it could be sleepiness, or it could be other factors. Now, my nightmare is that I'm driving and there's a spider in the car. Things like that happen all the time and people get into accidents and you just have to calm yourself and pull over. But that to me is one of the scariest things because you're in charge of a 2-ton vehicle. And I don't know if this happened to anybody else out there, but it really set in for me after I had a child. I used to be such a confident driver. I was a knee driver. You ever drive with your knee? You know what I mean? Your hands are right there. You're fine. You can grab the wheel, but you're just cruising. You're just driving with your knee. You're just relaxed, driving the vehicle. Steering wheel just balanced, hands just grazing the steering wheel, just having a good time, not stressed, a confident driver is what I'm saying. That all changed after I had a child. Something changed inside me where I would almost start to have panic attacks while I was driving because the reality of this vehicle moving at the rate of speed that it's moving with all these other vehicles moving also at the rate of speed, somehow the reality of that would sink in and I would start to like sweat just thinking about how scary that is, that one person could sneeze two lanes over and wreck and get all of us. And if you're driving right now, I am so sorry. You're fine. Stay focused. You're good. Take a deep breath. Breathing is what it's all about. But also be a defensive driver. If somebody swerved right now, what would you do? Just have a plan. It's weird that we get around the way we get around. There should definitely be safer, faster, better, cleaner, more reliable public transportation. Because I hate that I have to get on the highway in a giant car to go somewhere. It makes me not want to go. There's room for improvement, I think, when it comes to how we get around. One of the things, and if you're a fancy lady living in Potomac and you're going to go out and have a nice dinner and throw some drinks back or be sleepy or have prescription something, I don't know what her situation was, why not just get an Uber home? And on that note, there is a thing where if you've had too many drinks, you can call a company, I'm going to have to look this up, and somebody will come out there and drive you in your car to your house, and then they will Uber back to where they came from. Let me find this thing. Okay, I found it. It is called Safe Ride America. If you live in America, they have an app. They have an app for the Apple App Store or for Google Play, Safe Ride America. It says it's a well-respected, widely available nonprofit that vows to drive you and your car home for less than the price of a rideshare or a taxi. That's pretty amazing. I hope that anybody out there who has ever found themselves in a position where they're like, am I good to drive? Try this service and let me know if it works out for you. Safe Ride America. It seems like a great solution. The big thing with people not wanting to take an Uber is like, well, I got to go back and get my car the next morning. So they want to remove that impediment from your mind and tell you, don't worry about that. I'll drive you in your car. Please don't get behind the wheel. That is, again, Safe Ride America. Now, finally, I think we've covered a lot of the Bravo news that's popping, so I'm going to get into Roadhouse now. Roadhouse, if you haven't seen it, is a cult classic film, 1989, starring Patrick Swayze. So I don't want anybody to tell me that I'm spoiling it for them somehow. Get with it. Pause this podcast right now and go watch Roadhouse if you feel like this is somehow going to ruin it for you, to understand that the plot is about a bouncer who gets hired to kind of regulate bad guys who keep coming in and making fights happen in a honky-tonk in Missouri. That's the original plot of the 1989 version. And Patrick Swayze has a black belt and a PhD in philosophy. It's so silly. It's so silly to say it out loud, okay? But that's the movie. It's like the saying of speak softly but carry a big stick, which he definitely brought big stick energy also to Roadhouse. So his character and his persona was a quiet, thoughtful, introspective person whose last resort when he can't de-escalate a situation. Honestly, it's not a bad template for how you should try to go about conflict resolution. He's always very, very nice to everyone. That's his formula. When he's training the other bouncers, he's like, we are polite, we are kind, we ask nicely for people to tone it down or obey the rules or whatever it is. And it's only if you can't solve something by being nice that you resort to physical violence. So the original movie is pretty gritty. It's always on cable. You can catch this movie. People die violently. There are 80s bad guys. It's very lewd, you know. I mean, there's a couple different storylines in the movie where you're just like, oh gosh, it's fun being a woman, isn't it? Look how men like to portray us in movies. Look what men like to do in movies when there are no women probably in the writer's room or acting as a producer or any position of power when this movie got made. Having said that, there are some good, strong female characters in the movie. There's a funny lady who works at the bar slash roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. She provides some comic relief. And then there's his love interest. And the larger plot is that he is standing in the way of some rich guy who wants to come and take over the bar. And so he's like starting all this drama on purpose, trying to get this land or whatever that he wants. I can't remember the details of it, but that's the gist. And Patrick Swayze has been beat up bad. Like when he travels, he keeps his like medical records with him because he's had so many broken bones and issues and whatever. And that's just kind of like part of his existence. Now, the remake that I watched last night, I started it at like 10 p.m. My husband's like, what are you doing? I was like, I did not know that it was available. They've remade Roadhouse. I'm compelled to watch it because there's also been drama around this movie from the director. The man who directed the movie is Doug Liman, and he called for a boycott of it. He did not want anyone to watch it. He fully turned his back on this movie after saying that he thought it was a great movie that he made because it was supposed to go to theaters. And instead, Amazon Prime, I think, ended up buying up, I'm going to find the details in a second, but ended up buying the movie production, and they decided it was going to go straight to streaming. And you've seen Doug Liman movies and you've liked them because he also directed The Bourne Identity. That's Jason Bourne. He also directed Edge of Tomorrow, which I love. That's the Emily Blunt, Tom Cruise movie where they're fighting aliens in London and in Europe. And Emily Blunt is all jacked and stuff. So a lot of his movies, people are jacked and fighting. So he boycotted it and they had the premiere of it at South by Southwest. South by. Are you going to South by? The thing about having worked in corporate America is that if there's ever anything cool, corporate America will kill it. So to me, when I think of South by Southwest now, I just think of executives who want to seem cool, who all go down there and can get passes. And they just figure out a way to like push their business stuff or somehow have that fold in to their consulting staff work. You going to South by? But that's life, whatever. The director boycotted it, so he did not go to South by. And when I watch this movie, I have to set aside what we know about Jake Gyllenhaal. The red scarf, the Taylor Swift drama, him dating her when she was too young. But that was a long time ago. We let all of that go when we turn on Roadhouse and we see that Jake Hake Gyllenhaal is supposed to be a UFC fighter and he has worked on his body so that it looks like the body of a UFC fighter. But pretty early on, we learn that this man is haunted. Something went awry in a UFC fight and he's haunted by it. So he's got demons. Now, Patrick Swayze's character, as far as I recall, did not have demons. He was just good at fighting. And I'm not going to spoil it all for you, but I'll just say, you know, he ends up taking a very good paying job from a woman because she's having a bad crowd come to her roadhouse. And so she wants a really good bouncer to take charge. And so that's where the plot lines really overlap, is he's going to come to this roadhouse. But this now is, it's set in the Florida Keys. That doesn't spoil anything to know that. So it's really pretty. The movie's beautiful. And his job is to regulate the ne'er-do-wells who come in and start drama. And just like the original, he doesn't know until he gets into it that this is all happening because some rich guy wants something. And doesn't that just describe life? This is all happening because some rich guy wants something. It's similar to the original in that there's a lot of lovable and likable characters. People that work at the bar slash roadhouse, people who live nearby, people who welcome him, this outsider who's used to being an outsider, finds a sense of community and belonging. He finds something to really fight for. Similar to Patrick Swayze, but not as good because no one could ever be. He has, we all know, Jake Gyllenhaal has a very likable, charming, endearing way about him. He worked very hard for the UFC type body that he has in this movie, and you see a lot of it. And rightly so, because if I had denied myself food that I probably wanted to eat and done 2 workouts a day and made sure to get, I don't know, probably 10, 11 hours of sleep and done all that stuff, I'd just be walking around naked. You would have to force clothes on me. If I put that much work into my body where I had a 6-pack and was just ripped from head to toe, you would get sick of me. And that's the real luxury of being an actor or a movie star, is that you have it documented throughout time that you worked on yourself and got yourself to look like XYZ. And there's a whole world of people who are like, no, you looked good then. Like for a lot of us, when we were at our physical peak, no, there's maybe like 2-3 people who are also aware of it. Of like, yeah, no, you look really good. It's like, I need millions to know. So good for Jake Gyllenhaal. Now, where the movie was very different to me, and again, I'm not going to spoil it for you. Wonder what happens in a movie called Roadhouse. You think there's just a lot of fussing and fighting? Pretty much. It greatly differed because Roadhouse number one, Patrick Swayze was the primary focus. He was the lead. He had all the swagger. He had the attitude. He had the smiles, all of it. He got the ladies respectfully and with consent, enthusiastic consent. He got a lady doctor as his girlfriend. And there was a light courtship. There was flirting. There was romance. There was a night of fun. Now you fast forward 35 years and things are hard. The rent is too damn high. The planet is heating up. You give me Jake Gyllenhaal with 1% body fat and you don't give me romance? They give us one smooch. One smooch. Not even a good one. I give it a 6. But where they do focus a majority of their time is on Conor McGregor. the professional fighter that they have pretend to be, you know, this arch nemesis to Jake Gyllenhaal's character in this movie. And they keep the name Dalton. Jake goes by Dalton, just like the 1989 movie. We see so much of Conor McGregor, him being saucy, him being, you know, a fighter, him walking in slow motion, him wearing designer clothes and fighting, him being this like psychopath loose cannon, him being a ladies man, him not caring about anything he does. He has no fear and this and that. This movie was almost like a love letter to Conor McGregor, in my opinion. This character that they built for him, his either true ego or alter ego, that was the majority. And I think Jake was giving us a lot to work with. He was not coy or reserved with his love interest in this movie. He was very straightforward, I would say, flirty. And then they take a hard left turn with it. So that when she actually, you know, goes to make something happen, he's like, you don't want to have anything to do with a guy like me. And I'm like, stop it. By the time a woman has decided that, yes, she is going to pursue something with you, she already has done all the research. And I laugh because then she says, you don't think I have Google? You don't think I looked you up? I know everything about you already and I'm fine with it. So again, they're alluding to this past that he's ashamed of, that he's carrying this emotion about that he had with the UFC fighting, which I won't ruin it. You're going to have some surprises in the movie. But if you've ever watched a movie in your life, you can probably fill in the blanks of what happened that he's ashamed about. But then, you know, Conor McGregor's character comes in and really just kind of sucks all the air out of the room. And the focus is on that person. And he's not a professional actor, right? He's an MMA, UFC, whatever fighter. So he's just got this one card that he's playing, which is like, you know, a smirk, a cocky smirk, and does whatever he wants, which is probably just how he goes through life, apparently. He's got a pretty bad public image right now. A lot of allegations came out right as they were casting, I think, or either starting to film this with him. What was really shocking to me is that this man is only 34 years old. I'm watching this, I'm like, this guy's in his 40s for sure. Because Jake Gyllenhaal is 43, and he looked younger in the movie. But that's what hard living will do to you. And he's got a string of allegations, one of sexual assault, of trying to assault a woman after an NBA Finals game in Miami. And that is scathing. On the other end of it, I mean, he's got several traffic charges, I guess. He's been driving a lot without insurance, without a license, just getting in a sports car and just speeding around on the roads. Property damage, throwing things at a bus, April 2018. I'm reading this timeline of just all the stuff he's ever gotten into trouble for, and it's just not good things. Not a guy you want to just be hanging out with as a woman. December 2018 through present, this is by Rolling Stone. Then he was under investigation by Irish law enforcement, because this man is Irish, of assaulting a woman in a Dublin hotel. And then the next year in 2019, another complaint from a woman who said that he had assaulted her in a car outside of a Dublin pub. He, of course, denies everything. And we, of course, believe women. In 2019, he punched a pub customer who refused to take a shot of his whiskey that he has. The victim received an undisclosed sum in compensation. Wow. September of 2020, he was questioned and detained on the island of Corsica for another assault of a woman. Then in 2021, an Italian DJ and TV presenter who was hanging out with him, he's married, so he and his wife were hanging out with McGregor, and I guess he had a fiance at that time, and he said out of nowhere, after they'd been hanging out, he just attacked him unprovoked, and this guy said he's dangerous and he needs to be stopped. Then a woman said that she was assaulted on his yacht and he threatened to drown her. And apparently there are some more recent allegations. I'm not even going to go look for those. And then it also says that he has become the face of the far right nationalist movement in Ireland, which is a shame to hear, because Ireland for a long time, reading a couple articles about it, saying that Ireland was one of Europe's last countries without extreme nationalists in parliament. So far right as in like nationalist, anti-immigration, othering of people, which that always leads to good stuff. We should keep doing that and never learn a lesson. So that's a very quick snapshot into some of the scandals about who Conor McGregor is. And I didn't even know half of that when I'm watching the movie. I knew that he was not a great guy, but he was known for fighting well. And so he comes into the movie and it really just takes over. So the director is mad, you know, because they pushed this right out to Amazon Prime. And I think anybody that watches this movie is probably going to have the same perspective that I did, where it's like, it really does feel like a movie for Conor McGregor. Like, that's his star vehicle. They lean too heavily on him to carry the film through. And as I was watching it, I was thinking of all of these other plot lines that they could have gone with. He could have been in there, but just for a few minutes. But he eats up the movie. He's everywhere. And what gets sacrificed is the sweetness that Roadhouse 1989 brought you. You saw more of a character development for Patrick Swayze. You saw more of him finding happiness. You saw more of his relationship with Sam Elliott, the amazing, great Sam Elliott, who had a very big role in the original Roadhouse and became like Patrick Swayze's kind of best friend in that movie. So at the end, when I was done watching it, I felt like the movie was definitely made more for 13 to 25-year-old men than it was for a more general audience. Whereas to me, the original Roadhouse, I felt like it had a little something for everybody. Because even in this one, you know, the lady doctor, they kept that plot line. So he still meets a lady doctor, but she's not just that. They like pull her into this other storyline. They made it more complicated where it didn't need to be. And then they focused on sort of sillier things, surface level things, where I thought that they really could have made it a much better movie.
And I haven't even talked about the stunts. The whole movie, whenever there's action, the stunts are pretty outrageous and unbelievable. It looks like some of them are a little bit CGI. The things that happen to their bodies in the movie, they just really are off the charts. It's like Jake's getting hit with cars. He's getting stabbed multiple times in the same spot. They're opening it up and he's just like has a guffaw laugh about it. He says no to pain medication for it. There's one scene where he's being beaten pretty badly and it's like there's no way he would be able to stand up. I mean, it would take weeks for him to recover from the beating that he just took. And the next day he just has like a tiny Band-Aid over his eyebrow. That kind of a thing.
I'm on the team. Yeah, just send it to streaming. Send it to streaming. I don't think it had the overall rounded clout to go to theaters. And if anything, it's a disservice to Jake Gyllenhaal and to this cute as a button actress that I've never seen her before in a movie. So I'm sure she had really high hopes for this as well, that plays a lady doctor. All the other actors I've seen in things before. Her name is Daniela Melchior. I hope we see her in other things. She was great. They just did not give her a great role to me. It was okay. And they did a complete divergence from the original's focus on like Patrick Swayze being, you know, into philosophy and deep thinking and Tai Chi and really looking for his inner peace and knowledge and understanding of the world. That whole deep thinker part, gone. Poof, gone. We hit things. So I know it's a remake, but these are still very different movies to me, very different characters. They do not compare. They could have taken what was and built upon it and made it great, but instead they made a different movie here. It was fun, you know. Towards the end, I was pretty tired of watching the fighting. They had some elements where they tried to add heart and tried to have him be emotionally invested in the people and the town that he goes to, which is great. And there is one scene where he snaps, which, you know, I love it when someone snaps. There's a scene where he snaps and I love his dialogue. And then the movie really ratchets up to another level, which was great. So don't get me wrong. There are some good moments. It's a fun movie to watch. I don't know that I will watch it again other than putting it on mute when I'm doing something in the gym and I need motivation to keep going. Like, look, if these men have the mental strength to do 10 more push-ups, so can you. You know, that kind of thing. I have a whole slew of movies that I like to watch when I work out that I'm like, if they could do it, then I can do it. Oh, it pains me to give it like a 6. I'm going to give it like a 6 or a 7, which is also what I rate the mediocre one kiss that we get. They couldn't be bothered to give us flirty, fun romance during a dark time in human history. They had to give us more men hitting each other. And that's annoying. They mess with the Roadhouse ratio. And so feel my wrath. You get your 6 to 7. So if you've never seen the original Roadhouse, go ahead and do it. Enjoy the fashion from the 80s. That's kind of the best part. And I think that Patrick Swayze's attire holds up, other than the pleated jeans. But that's my movie review. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to try to do a random movie review every now and then. I watch so many movies, you have no idea. I've seen the new Dune. I'm obsessed. I love Dune. I had never read or seen the original films and books. Because, I mean, honestly, the original movie looks so weird and creepy, I had no interest. When it's a series of sci-fi books and there's that many of them, I know my personality. And it's like, if I really get into that, I will get nothing done. So I have to wait for somebody with vision to make a great movie about it. So occasionally I'm going to drop a random movie review in here. And because we got to cheat on Bravo sometimes. You know what I mean? There's more to life than Bravo. It's fun as an accompaniment to other things we have going on. But when your life becomes nothing but Bravo shows, I think there can be a real danger of your mind warping how human beings are really supposed to interact with one another. And my DVR is fresh, by the way. As many of you know, my DVR went on the fritz and I had to reprogram everything. I had classic episodes from pretty much every franchise that I was planning on keeping forever. And those are all gone. Absolutely gone. Just lost. I still feel out of sorts about it because I had all my automatic stuff going, but I also feel free. I can just decide, what do I really want to watch on Bravo? I don't have to watch this franchise just because it always automatically records. So drop me a line on DM on Instagram and let me know what you're watching these days. What do you think is the best show out there? A bunch of new shows are about to start. Some shows are wrapping up. I'm probably going to do the reunions of some of the shows that I missed episodes of. So I'm probably going to recap like the reunions of Potomac. I didn't get to see all of them, but some of them. And the reunion, thankfully, because they film so much with flashbacks now, it'll fill me in. Such a shame. You know, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the little poster for Roadhouse. It's probably a better experience for people who hadn't seen the original Roadhouse. So maybe what you do is you watch the new one. If you've never seen either, watch the newest one first, then go back and watch the old one. And then you'll see what we missed out on. But until then, like, subscribe to this pod, tell a friend to tell a friend. But whatever you do, don't be like Karen Huger. If you are going to go out and have a drink with some friends, if you are tired, whatever the situation is, call a friend to come get you. Call a Lyft. Find that Safe Ride America option. And keep yourself out of the blogs.